Hello and welcome to the Fraser of Allender podcast. My name is Ben Cooper, a research assistant here at the Institute, and today I'm joined by Deputy Director of the Institute, Mary Spowage, and Director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, Aidan Connolly. Today we're going to be talking about the retail sector in Northern Ireland and the impact that the current COVID-19 pandemic has had on the sector. So Aidan, thanks very much for joining us today. I wonder if you could maybe just start us off by giving a quick overview of the retail sector, the kind of nature of it and how it differs maybe to the retail sector we have here in Scotland and the rest of the UK.
So we have a bit more of an eclectic mix here in Northern Ireland between large retailer and small retailers, and we have very much a symbiotic relationship. Not only is the retail sector different, but actually our consumers are different, so we're more wedded to that big weekly shop than Great Britain. It's about 65+% of people here do a big weekly or big fortnightly shop, whereas across in Great Britain, you're talking it's the other way around, and only about 35% of people do that. They much prefer 3 or 4 times a week convenience shop. Retailers here, we're the largest private sector industry in Northern Ireland, with about 100,000 people employed. We sustain a lot more jobs through things like agri-food, construction services, and everything else that goes with it. So it really is a pillar of society. We have about 1 in 8 households as someone who works in retail. We're one of the few industries that employ more women than men. So 55% women in our industry compared to 45% men. And the big thing about the retail industry, and this goes for across the UK, is that we're going through a period of massive, massive change. We've seen more change in this past 5-7 years than we had in the previous 50. Now, a lot of this is driven by the move to online. A lot of this is also driven by consumer behaviour. And that's one thing to remember when you're talking about the retail industry. We are consumer driven, we are consumer focused. The other thing about the retail industry, especially in Northern Ireland, is that we really are at the centre of, because we're consumer facing, we see the end of the sort of supply chain and what people need, and that will drive us. But we're also a really good conduit between government and also the wider supply chain. Should that be agri-food, should that be clothing, should that be electronics? We are experts in trade, because we have to be, because that's what we do. And it's one of those ones where even though there's a lot of change, I think the core principles of retail, where we are trying to not just service a community, but we're trying to be part of a community. And I think that really resonates in Northern Ireland, where we tend to be quite colloquial. Some people may say that is a bad thing. Personally, I think it's a wonderful thing, that you still can go into your local stores and know people there and get that experience. And one of the good things about retail is that you can get the same customer experience in Belfast as you do in Birmingham, or as you do in Edinburgh. So yeah, it's a thriving industry. It's not without its challenges. I'm sure we'll get into that, including Brexit and COVID and everything else. But it's an industry that has a tangible and makes a tangible difference to everyday life.
I suppose that's then quite a nice segue into my next question then. Kind of touched on it throughout there about the impacts that things like Brexit and the current COVID situation have had in the retail sector. So suppose you could maybe just delve a bit further into the kind of the impacts you've experienced because of the pandemic on the sector itself, and can I then go into how the sector's had to adapt to that?
Well, I think I spent all of this past 3 years saying Brexit is the biggest threat to the retail industry in a generation. And then COVID comes along and you have to rewrite everything, because COVID has completely and utterly changed how the retail industry functions or doesn't function, as the case may be. It was a game changer from day one, in the fact that we, because of overbuying and panic buying, and which didn't need to happen. Supply chains were always good, and they remain good. The problems that there has been is because people have been overbuying when they really didn't have to, and quite frankly, you know, they weren't thinking of others, and that's why our key message has been think of others and buy responsibly. But if we look at the sort of microeconomic, the household, you know, people were buying more, and we saw very quickly that there was a 12% rise in the first couple of weeks of March on the amount that was being bought. But the second half of March, and since then, there's been a huge fall. Retail figures for the latter end of March were the worst that they've been since records began in 1995. And that has had a devastating effect on especially on those retailers who haven't been able to open. So let's look at it in two ways. Firstly, there is the those who have been able to open, and we've seen a lot of people going, yes, so big retailers, they must be raking it in, they're making millions. Actually, it's not happened like that. If you look at the costs have gone up. We have had to employ thousands of people. Actually, over 100,000 people have been employed to deal with the uptake in staff-heavy things that they're delivering, such as deliveries, people to drive the vans, people to pack, people to do the click and collect. Also, security staff, which we have never had to do before in this same way. Protection Perspex screens, 10,000 rolled out in the space of a week, and many more since then. All these costs eat into the profitability, and you've got to remember that retail is a very high volume, low profit industry, and that means even small cost rises can have a real big effect in the bottom line. As well as that, we saw footfall in the supermarkets go down maybe 12-15%, whereas we saw in the small convenience, because people didn't want to go to the supermarkets as much, and jump by about 30% as far as their demand. So how people changed a lot. The other side of things is what people were actually buying. So instead, because especially here in Northern Ireland, we have very volatile footfall. The reason we have very volatile footfall is because we have half of the discretionary income of Great British households. And that means that we are more reactive. Consumer confidence here dives very, very quickly. So what we had seen is that people had moved to from buying things that had that extra cushion of a profit margin down to being basic items. So luxury coffees, they went down to own brand coffees. Instead of buying steak, they bought mince, or even down to chicken. And all those things, again, because there's less profit margin in them, there's less ability for us to divvy with the cost rises. You're looking at food prices, and we've had some politicians come out and say, well, the food prices have gone up over the past couple of months. Actually, if you look at global commodity food prices, in February they went up about 8.1%. March they were up again. February, even sugar was up 13.9% in the space of a month. And if you look at correspondingly how products have actually gone up in that space, retailers are absorbing a lot of that hit. So not only are they getting less customers through the door, not only are they getting the customers through the door who are buying less profit heavy goods, but they're also having to spend an awful lot. On the other side of things, you also have people buying online now that never have. My parents are both in their 70s, and they have started buying online, which is good, and I can't wait to see what sort of birthday present I get this year. But they have, so people are now engaging with retailers, and even the small retailers here locally are starting to embrace that technology. Should that be through a social media outlet, or should that be through a pay-to-play formats such as eBay or Amazon or other ones that are out there. So it's changed how people are buying things as well. For those stores who have been closed, it's been particularly hard, and you know, we've been very grateful from the interventions that have come from the Stormont government and the Westminster government. But it's been really, really hard for them to absorb the cost, because a lot of costs don't go away. You know, even when we're getting support for our rates, you've still got your rent, you've still got stock coming through, you've still got things that you have ordered a long time ago, and you cannot break those contracts. So for us, there's a real need for people to understand that it's not a case that retail goes into hibernation. There's no such thing as deep freeze. Costs keep mounting up anyway.
I suppose that kind of leads me nicely to the next question. You're kind of talking through there about kind of how the sector, as ever so slightly touched on it at the beginning as well, about how this the retail sector in Northern Ireland is different. But again, a lot of what you're saying there about the move to online shopping, etc., it's quite similar to what we're seeing across the UK. So it was just if you had a kind of feel for how the impact might be different in Northern Ireland compared to the rest of the UK.
Well, traditionally here in Northern Ireland, we're a little bit slower on the uptick of the new technologies. And I think a part of that is because there's been traditionally infrastructure problems or dearth of infrastructure, as we would say, especially when you go west of the Bann. Now, sort of Christmas 2012, January 2013, that all changed very, very quickly. And we jumped about 20-25% overnight. It seemed like everybody and their dog was bought a tablet or a smartphone, and people were using that. But we were still slow to engage. I think there's two sort of changes that this COVID will drive as far as that mentality. The first one is, like I said, you're going to get smaller retailers engaging on online formats. Now, we used to talk about single channel. Say, for example, your single channel of bricks and mortars or your pure play, which are the ones who only do it online, and that would be their single channel. Then we move to multi-channel, and the multi-channel is you can do this, you can do click and collect. Now we're talking about omni-channel. How do we get our messages out to the consumer, but also how does the consumer then engage with us? How can we make it easier? Because, you know, a smartphone is definitely a different way of doing things than a computer, which is different than bricks and mortar. So that's the sort of space that a lot of retailers are moving in. And when everybody talks about the survival of the fittest here, because you got to remember, even before COVID, there were fundamental changes that were happening. There were fundamental problems. There were policy costs that continued to rise, both from Westminster and from the Stormont government. And here in Northern Ireland, we haven't had that resilience. We haven't had that ability, because even if you look at our vacancy rates, we're always about 5% worse off than the rest of the UK. And in fact, in 2012, we were up to 20% vacancy rate, which is, you know, astounding if you think of it. Now, it's got better, but we're still somewhere around 14%, which is unacceptable. So there is a realization that people need to work smarter to get people to spend their money. Like I said, omni-channel, make it easier for them. But on the other side of things, when you remember that Northern Ireland is basically even our cities are a series of villages that are plumped together. So there is a need for us to keep those moving and being successful. So retail and COVID is going to bring this to a head, that we need to have those conversations, because there'll be some retailers that do not survive this. In Northern Ireland, there'll be some hospitality guys who do not survive it. There'll be other places in the high street that don't survive it as well. So we need to have a grown-up conversation about what the high street looks like and about how the high street can be supported. It's about getting people to look at their high streets as destinations. It's about having an eclectic mix, a really good balance between hospitality, leisure, and retail, because retail is going to contract. It's happened in GB, it's starting to happen in Northern Ireland, and this will push it forward. So for me, there's a, especially for Northern Ireland, there's a need for that grown-up conversation about how do we support retail, but how do we support our high streets? How do we make our high streets destinations? And how do we get people to spend their time, not just their money?
Yeah, and as you say, that reflects a lot of the conversations that are happening across the UK about the future of retail. And there's been a lot of reflections that perhaps all this has done for the retail sector, or one of the things it's done is sort of hastened some of the trends that we were seeing anyway in terms of the decline of traditional retail and the changing nature of the high street. And perhaps we can come on to talk a bit more about things like business rates in a sec. But you mentioned the different policy measures that have been put in place by the UK government and the government of Stormont to support businesses through the crisis. What is your view generally about how they've supported your members? And I know they don't cover all of the elements of costs, but so what's your view of those measures? And has there been any difficulty in your members kind of accessing support?
Northern Ireland is slightly different than the rest of the UK in the fact that we are not as affluent, shall we say. We simply don't have the money in the coffers to be as generous towards business as Scotland or England has been. That's one of the reasons why we got a three-month rates break rather than the year. Now, the minister yesterday announced that there would be a four-month break for everyone and a year break for all of retail, hospitality and leisure, other than the food guys who are open. Now, we have to take a pragmatic approach to that. We have got a third of the year with no rates, which is always a great help. And for a lot of guys, this will for a lot of retailers, this will stop them from going under. This really is make or break for them. I think we've been very grateful of the finance minister. Him and his team have been, they've been in touch a lot, and they've been ready to listen. And you know, they pushed even the guys who were doing the from the University of Ulster Policy Centre. And they have really, you know, they listened. In fact, in the report, it was almost word for word about the concerns that we had. You can't ask for much more than that. The executive, one of the problems with the executive is that it's government by committee. And because of that, there were certain things that could have happened a little bit faster. But the majority of stuff, especially that which came from the Department of Finance, you know, usually this sort of stuff you're talking that it would be 6 months consultation before we go out, and those things were managed in a couple of weeks. Now, you're never going to please everyone, and you know, especially business, when we can take a decision like that and get it done, you're always going to have that sort of frustration with the public sector. But in general, and if we look at this in pragmatic and terms of possibilities, you know what, it was the government response in Northern Ireland has been more than adequate.
And what about measures that have been introduced at the UK level, like the job retention scheme? What's the sort of take-up been of that sort of initiative? And how key do you think the sort of continuation of that is for your members, particularly some of them who may not be able to open or not be able to sort of operate at capacity for some months to come?
So we have said, you know, we welcomed when it was extended. We're waiting to see, you know, it's one of those ones, thanks very much. Now, cross fingers, when are you going to, you know, when's the other shoe going to drop? We have always asked for a tailored approach to this. We've always asked for a graduated come out of, because what we don't need after having such a large economic shock to the industry is to have another one if furlough just decided to end. The uptake has been quite good. And you've got to remember that a lot of our members are UK-wide and even further afield. And I think this is largely being driven by the fact that we are a very staff-heavy industry, and there is a need to support those businesses that are closed, because we do want to be able to open again, and we do want to be able to continue to provide those jobs. So yes, the furlough scheme is good. I think there were worries. If we had seen the spikes that we had thought we would on COVID, there were worries that people on furlough would not want to go and work in retail, or would not want to go and work in food processing plants if needed, because they could sit at home and get 80%. I think there's been people who have been very disparaging about the furlough scheme. Honestly, though, for us in retail, it has been a lifesaver in a lot of ways, and we're very grateful for it.
Okay, so turning to what I know is your favourite subject, Aidan, Brexit. So we've talked in the past about the sort of unique impact that perhaps Brexit, and particularly this sort of flavour of Brexit that is now on the table, might have for Northern Ireland. So what's your view of this in the context of the current crisis? How do you think this is going to pan out in terms of the interaction between the recovery from the crisis that's caused by coronavirus and a potential form of Brexit that's been proposed, which may be in place in January?
But firstly, when you said you're my favourite subject, I thought we were going to get on to hats and waistcoats. But no, I think one of the things that COVID has done that perhaps hadn't been done before is that for the body politic, for a lot of those guys that put it into focus, how wonderful our just-in-time supply chains are, how effective they are, and how much money they save. But it also put it into perspective how fragile they are and how little it takes a just-in-time supply chain to run this might-come supply chain. And I think this is where we now find ourselves in a period of realization. Now, Michael Gove, not 45 minutes ago when we were recording this, has been on his feet in the House of Commons and has put down the plans for the UK government to implement the protocol. And to be honest, we would have liked to have been having these conversations 6 months ago. The fact that he's put it out, but he still hasn't been talking to business on it, and our technical experts, is quite a worry. I said in January that we had a Herculean task to deliver mitigations before the end of this year. It's only got harder since then. Mm. I think the resilience that perhaps that we had built up over this previous 3 years and the false starts of Brexit last year and the no deal planning, that's all gone. That there is no wiggle room, there is no resilience left within the supply chains or within the retail industry. So the pressure is on. The pressure's on the UK to flesh out those technical solutions that we've been asking for. But the pressure is also on the EU to show some generosity of spirit and to allow mitigations to take place. Now, some of those will be interpretation of the UCC, interpretation of the rules that are within the protocol. Other things will require derogation. And there are some things which they may be more willing to move than others. On SPS, it's very, very difficult to see how they will move unless, as part of the FTA, free trade agreement, sorry, gotta stop speaking in acronyms. Part of the free trade agreement, we get both a veterinary agreement, so a New Zealand style, so 1% checks rather than 10%, or a security agreement, and then VAT as well. You know, I can't see them moving too much on VAT. It's one of those things that Europe is particularly stringent about. We're in the same place we were in before COVID, which is in that we don't have a lot of time to deliver some fundamental solutions and fundamental outcomes for Northern Ireland business, but also for Northern Ireland households, because you can't forget this is not simply an economic issue. This is a standard of living issue for Northern Ireland households. The one thing that COVID has done is to put the pressure on, it's removed some of the resilience. But I think, though, it's also on both sides of the English Channel, I think that it has brought a realization that there is a need to move. And I think that we wouldn't be, you know, I'm having seeing what Michael Gove put on the table today, having spoken to Task Force UK yesterday, I'm a little more buoyant. I'm not going to say happy, but I'm a little more buoyant than I perhaps had been. I think there's an awful lot of work to do yet. I still think that it's a Herculean task, but I think now that we are in the process of having serious discussions, the first part to dealing with a problem is admitting that there is a problem. And today, with what Michael Gove has said about there will be the need for checks, they will have to implement the protocol. That's the first time we've heard that. And that, for me, is hugely significant.
But do you think, you know, you sort of talked about the need for her flexibility from the EU side and the sort of generosity of spirit. So from what you've heard today, do you think there's a chance that the UK government will be a bit more flexible as well about their kind of approach to this, and implementing the protocol?
This is the big problem that we have had since October last year. Because anything that comes with the Joint Committee, anything that comes with the FTA, anything that comes with the NI protocol, and specifically with the protocol, the UK is saying, ha-ha, this is a chance for further negotiation, whereas the EU is going, implement it. No, you've already agreed this, now implement it. You know, and that is where the fundamental friction has been in play since November of last year, where everybody went, we've got a deal. What did we say? You know, and it has been that sort of, it hasn't helped the fact that a lot of the speechifying has been based around ideology rather than economics and custom process. And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
And I suppose just to kind of round up the discussion, we're just keen to get your thoughts on what you think what the vision of the long-term impact on the sector of the crisis is.
Okay, well, just hold on, like, polish off my crystal ball here. I think there's a lot of work to be done here. I think it's brought questions to light and conversations to bear that haven't been front of mind. So again, what are our high streets look like? What do we want them to look like? How do we get people to engage? The fact that it is not people who go, I am never going online, are now online, and I mean shopkeepers as well as shoppers. I think there's an interesting dynamic that play where people have stayed away from supermarkets in some ways. So you've seen where convenience retailers are up about 30% and grocery retailers, that the big supermarkets, are down about 12%. And that is something that could carry over. Part of that is people don't want to go to the big out-of-town ones. They want to stay local. They're protecting themselves. A lot of people are talking about this bounce back, you know. But a bounce back usually happens when it's over. And this is, everything's okay, we go back to normal. That's not going to happen with this. With this, you're talking about it's going to be 18 months, it's going to be 2 years. And you're talking about consumer confidence. You know, I don't know about you, but going out in a pub, which you've got hundreds of people, it wouldn't be my thing anyway. But I could see why people would want to do it. I could see why people definitely wouldn't want to go anywhere near. So how we shop, you know, the levels of hygiene that are needed, the levels of social distancing, all that sort of thing is going to be around for quite a while. And this isn't going to be a bounce back as we have seen in economic bounce backs, say, for example, after a recession, or, you know, this is going to be a slow burn until we get used to what happens. And that's the big thing. What we're talking about here now is a new normal. That new normal will depend on medical advice, of course, but it will also depend on consumer confidence and consumer sentiment, how they want to engage with us. Then you've got the other big thing in this is that you don't actually have to go to shops for a lot of things now. You know, like I said, my parents are in their 70s and than their first online shops. So there is no sort of, there's no crystal ball on this. There's no way that I can say exactly what's going to happen. What I can say, though, is that retailers are going to have to work harder. They're going to have to work smarter. And that is reflective of this omni-channel shopping that there is. If we want people to go into our city centres, we're going to have to encourage them to do that. We're going to have to make it easy, safe, accessible for them to do that. If we're wanting them to go online, we need to make it safe. Everything from protected transactions, bright, airy. This has become a consumer led revolution. And where it ends, I don't know. But what I do know is that our members and the retail industry are completely committed to Northern Ireland. I think, though, what we need is that for government to realise that we're in an ever-changing state of flux. And for if they want us to continue to be that biggest private sector employer for Northern Ireland, we're going to need support. Now, it doesn't have to be a handout, but a hand up. And how we can bring other industries with us. So, for example, Food to Go retail supports the agri-food industry, as does supermarkets. And it's about having a better idea. And I think that some of them are getting this about how the retail industry works, and that food just doesn't appear on your plate, that there's long journeys.
Yeah, and Ben said that was our last question, but I've got a slightly geeky tax question to finish off with, if that's okay.
No.
You mentioned about government realising how important the industry is, and it's a large employer, and it's actually kind of part of communities and part of building the high street. I mean, do you have any views on the kind of the future of business rates through all this? Because the measures on the reliefs have been put in place, okay, as you've said, they've been more extensive in other parts of the UK and for longer. But, you know, the future of sort of physical premises, both for offices and for retail, you know, is sort of in question. And the role that business rates plays and the burden on types, certain types of businesses and not on others. So you got any views on that?
Well, the big thing is there's a lot of people out there going, I asked to work from home 2 days a week for years and you've told me no, and now you're telling me I have to work from home. What's all this about? So there's this kind of crazy dynamic going on. But you're absolutely right. The way that we do things is changing, and that will have to be reflected in the nature of taxation. Here in Northern Ireland, up until the rates revaluation, it only got a little bit better. We and warehousing were 30% of business rates, but we were only 12% of the economy. And that's inequitable, and it's non-tenable. We can't do that for a long time, but we have done. So business rates in Northern Ireland are antiquated. They are not fit for purpose in the 21st century. I could come out with loads of lines. It's something that we've been working on for ever since I started this job eight years ago. But I think that the big messages are business rates bad, burden too big. But when you add that into all the other policy costs that have come through, like national living wage, pension contributions, everything right through the carrier bag level, what you're talking there is about a cumulative burden on retailers that has continued to grow and grow and grow and grow. That's not sustainable. I think we need to look at what we can change. Business rates is one of the few things in Northern Ireland that is under taxation that is levied by Stormont. There's a chance for us to change that. How we do it and how we do it equitably is up for debate. The big thing, though, is doing nothing is not an option anymore.
Well, Aidan, thank you very much for that. I just want to take the opportunity again to thank you for your insight there, and also thank Mary for joining the discussion today. Don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast through all major streaming platforms and keep up to date with all our work on the Fraser of Allender website at fraserofallender.org. We're posting regularly on the Scottish economy and wider society, and you can also find links to our other podcasts and the Twitter Thank you again for listening, and we'll be back soon with another edition of the Fraser of Allender podcast.